Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Welcome to the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio. It is Jake Watson in for Johnny Burrow, but luckily for you lot, we have got the expert in the studio, which will be very much needed this evening. We have got Lawrence Barreto, senior writer for F1.com. Lawrence, very good evening.
Evening.
How are we doing? Are we well?
I'm very well, yeah.
Good. Look, this is my first time this evening in the driving seat.
Oh, it's easy.
Sorry.
Don't you worry.
Are you sure?
I'll let you get away with that gag as well.
Learner driver. Throughout the show, we're going to be joined by Ed Straw, Grand Prix editor for Autosport. Also, Luke Smith, F1 editor for Crash.net. A number of big stories to discuss over the course of the next hour. Of course, namely Silverstone, the small matter of that. But that being said, Lawrence, there has been some kind of breaking news, I suppose, in the world of F1 over the course of the last couple of hours. What is it and how significant is it, mate?
Well, that's why it's been a little bit of a buzz, I think, just before we're about to come on air. So McLaren have announced that Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris, who's a young British rookie driver, will form their lineup next year. It's very early in the year for teams to be announcing their driver lineup. So I think it's partly because they're so confident in Carlos and Lando. They've been brilliant this year.
Yeah.
And also to sort of fend off from other teams coming in and saying, oh, hello, we might be interested in these guys. It just cuts all that speculation, means that they don't get bothered, not too much pressure. And it's nice ahead of their home race. So like you mentioned, the British Grand Prix coming up this weekend. McLaren, for them, it's a big weekend. They're based down in Woking, so it's not very far for them to travel, and for their team and for the engineers and mechanics who work hard, they get to come along and see all the cars. So it's just kind of a nice, good, feel-good story ahead of the weekend to get those drivers done and dusted for next year.
Yeah, so I was actually reading some stuff about Carlos Sainz earlier on today, and he was saying how pleased he was with the car this year, that it was basically further along than he perhaps expected it to be. I mean, they're still not putting up trees as such, but clearly there is an all-round agreement that everything is moving in the right direction.
So last year was not the finest, should we say, for McLaren. So when he joined, he knew it was going to be difficult. And I think from the off, really from Australia, they've shown that they've made a really good impression over the winter. They've done a really good development curve. The Renault engine that they've got has improved. And even from that first race, both Carlos and Lando have been really strong. And what's been impressive, I think, is we're 9 races into this season and the car has got better and better at each race. And that was something that they've really struggled with over the last few years. The other thing is that they brought developments to the circuit. So that's both aerodynamic, and Renault have brought engine improvements as well. And each time they've added them to the car, they've worked. And I know that sounds like an obvious thing to say, but often they don't work and then it makes the car worse. So it's actually been really nice to see McLaren, after so many years of struggling, to really be on this upward trajectory. And so Carlos is right. He wasn't really expecting this, and it's turned out for the better. And I think if you're a fan of that orange and blue team, then you're going to be pretty happy.
And for Carlos himself, he's been around for a little while now, and it feels like he's been so rated for such a long time, but never really kind of landed a particularly good car or in a strong team, or he's been kind of the number two driver. I mean, how big an opportunity is this now for him to have a team that has clearly got some faith in him and is also moving in the right direction?
Well, I think he was suffering a little bit from being moved around. So he spent some time at Toro Rosso, then he moved to Renault for a year, and then he's got McLaren. I think the real important thing for him when he joined McLaren is that they signed him on a multi-year deal. So he knew that they wanted him and they really wanted him. When he gets this news today, it's just that kind of confirmation that he's actually doing a really good job, and I think that will serve as motivation for him. He feels this year that he's driving better than ever, and I think on the basis of the results this year, he's currently 7th in the championship. And I know that doesn't sound brilliant, but if you consider the top 3 teams, Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari, are so far ahead of everyone else, if you're that next best, which is where Carlos is at the moment, that just shows you're doing a really good job. And I think across all of the 9 races this year, he hasn't put a foot wrong, and I think that's very impressive. So I think he's benefiting from a McLaren team that are backing him massively, from all those years of experience that you mentioned that he's kind of built up over a period of time, and the fact that he's just enjoying it. You can see this look on his face when he's getting into the car now. He's actually just enjoying going racing.
Yeah, and is it ridiculous to say that McLaren is such a huge name, aren't they, in racing? But yeah, they've had a number of troublesome years. Is it beyond the realms of possibility that at some point they could have a car that can compete, you know, with the Mercedes and the Red Bulls?
Probably not this year, but I think that coming going ahead for the next couple of years, and there's a massive rule change for 2021 whereby the aero regulations are going to change dramatically. If they can kind of get themselves in a position by the end of this year to say be the fourth best team, and then they can get some more prize money for that, and it all kind of helps them build a better car for next year. And if they can get some momentum, McLaren have definitely got the people, they've got the drivers, and they've got the management structure to actually be back up at the top. It just takes time in Formula One. You can't just like switch it on like that, unfortunately.
A word then on Lando Norris, you know, who also has secured his place in that team for next season.
I think when rookies start in Formula One, there's always a bit of more pressure on them because changes happen so frequently. And so you've kind of got to deliver as soon as you get in the car. Now, Lando benefited from several years at McLaren, as in kind of bedding himself in, did reserve development roles, got to know who he was working with. And every time he got a chance in the car, he delivered. So I think he had that real good foundation to build on. So when he's got into the car this year, he's nailed it from the start. He's had the worst share of unreliability, unfortunately. So he hasn't got as many points as Carlos, and he perhaps hasn't quite obviously got that experience of Carlos. But when he's had the opportunity, the last two races, he's started fifth on the grid. So he's always beaten one of those top three teams that we're talking about, at least one of them, which is impressive in itself. And he scored points. And I think that's the best that McLaren can hope for. And the drivers too, both get on. They play FIFA with each other all the time at races, and that
it helps. Of course, it helps.
Definitely.
But at 19 years old, we know it is rookie year. Nine races in, it's 4 points. I mean, are they looking beyond that? Are they seeing something beyond the points in terms of his potential?
I think so. I think when you are able to settle as a rookie driver like Lando has, and then show that raw speed straight away, so in qualifying, I think that's always the best way to spot a good driver, if they can deliver in qualifying.
Okay.
Under pressure, they've got to deliver in that one moment.
And they've got the speed.
Exactly. And it just shows. So I think, and he's managed to do that consistently across the year. So I feel like, I also imagine that there's a couple of other people, other teams on the grid who thought, oh, hello, these two guys are pretty good. Maybe we'll start having a chat to them and see if they're interested in joining. And that just destabilises them. So McLaren would be quite keen to kind of keep that bubble wrap around them and keep them on that upward trajectory. The other thing is that Fernando Alonso, so double world champion, he's part of the McLaren family and still hasn't said that he doesn't want to come back to Formula One yet. So by making this announcement, that at least stops all those rumours and people asking, well, is Fernando coming back next year? Is Fernando coming back next year? They won't destabilise the drivers anymore with that. So it makes so much sense in many ways that they've made the announcement this early, I think.
Yeah, OK, and then just one last one, I suppose, on these two. They're both young drivers. I know Lando's a teenager, but let's not forget that Sainz is still only 24 as well. The youngest ever pairing McLaren have had. How far can either of them go? You know, even if it's not with McLaren, I'm talking like longer term. Mm-hmm. You know, do these have the potential to drive for, you know, a Red Bull? Could they get picked up by them, like a Mercedes? Could eventually kind of be a world champion, or at the very least be winning Grand Prix?
So I think it's a little bit harder with Lando because we've only seen him in
too early.
Yeah, sort of 8 or 9 races. But I think there's been enough there to suggest that if he sticks around and keeps doing this, yeah, he can go and win races. He's shown in lower formulae that he's capable of winning and dealing with the pressure that comes with winning and driving for top teams. So I think if he keeps on that trajectory, I don't see any reason why not. I think from what we've seen from Carlos this year, but over the years, is enough to suggest that, yeah, definitely he can win races if given the car and the team around him to do so. And I think that's probably really exciting for McLaren, because they've got two drivers then who could potentially take them forward if they can give them the car to do so.
Yep. And it's great news, exciting news ahead of what is going to be an exciting weekend in Formula One. It's the Silverstone Grand Prix. I mean, for Lando, obviously, in particular, as a Brit, I mean, is this as exciting as it gets in kind of the calendar year for someone like yourself as well?
I think so. I think when you get to go to your home race, it just means something a little bit more, whether you're a fan, a journalist, a racing driver. I just think it's just the more exciting. And Silverstone happens to be one of the best tracks on the calendar. It's phenomenal. The way that you've got some corners with a changing of direction. If you've never seen a Formula One car before at high speed, go to Silverstone and go to sit at the Beckett's Chapel sequence. And they do 180, turning left, right really quickly. And to watch a car do that is just quite extraordinary, really. And so I think for the fans, it's going to be a bumper crowd there this weekend. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a sellout. And it's quite a weekend actually for sport, because it's the same as the Wimbledon final and the cricket World Cup final.
Potentially the England in the cricket World Cup final as well.
It could be pretty mega, couldn't it, all round? Yeah. And Lewis is looking pretty good at Silverstone every year. So I wouldn't put it past him that he's going to at least hold up his end of the bargain and put a race victory. But we can talk about that later.
Yeah, no, we can do. Let's talk a little bit more about the Silverstone itself as a venue. Because, you know, I feel that we sometimes get perhaps more excited about the glamour, perhaps destinations on the circuit. And I feel sometimes that Silverstone almost gets forgotten about a little bit, or certainly not talked about in the same terms, in my opinion, as the likes of Monaco, you know, Singapore and all these kind of places. But this really is, in terms of a venue as well, not just for the drivers, but for the fans, this is one of the best races on the season, isn't it?
It's definitely not the fanciest venue we go to. You're right. It's on an airfield.
And Formula One is a very glamorous sport, isn't it?
It does try to sell itself on being glamorous.
Well, it is.
You're thinking about Monaco, aren't you? And your Singapores and the boats in the harbours and that kind of thing.
I think that's what lots of people think about. You know, when they look at the tour, think, oh, that's perhaps the one I want to go to. But, you know, Silverstone is iconic. It's one of the oldest. It's one of the most well attended. You know, it's a special you know, part of the season.
I think the other benefit is the circuit delivers good racing, so entertaining racing. But also, when you want to see a Formula One car go fast and you want those change of directions, Silverstone is the place to go to. The drivers love it, and I think if the drivers love it, you're going to get a better race, and you're also going to get them more excited and more interested in going. And I think that I think you'd struggle to find someone on the grid this year who would say that Silverstone isn't in their top five circuits. So I think that's really important from one. The other end, as you mentioned, it always gets a really good crowd, and atmosphere can sometimes be underplayed, but it's really important, I think, at a sporting event. And while I think sometimes if the drivers say they can hear the crowd when they're in the cars, I'm not certain that is true. Maybe on the cool down lap, maybe.
Yeah.
I think it does make a difference if you can see out the corner of your eye all of that support for you and the fans.
Yeah, no, it must be pretty cool.
And, you know, people are paying to watch you do your day job. So that's pretty good, I think. So I think that does make a difference for the drivers. The circuit itself is just brilliant. It's a mix of fast, medium speed corners. You got plenty of opportunity to overtake. Obviously, you've got the British weather, so you never know quite what that's going to throw into the hat.
Yeah.
We've had this heat wave that's been hitting, but the forecast at the moment says there could be rain. So how typically British.
Of course.
And that can mix things up. Some of the most exciting races that we've had at the British Grand Prix have been when it's rained. Lewis won one year where he almost finished a lap ahead of everyone. So it just kind of, it makes races sometimes more entertaining, and it really brings out driver skill. So I think as a venue and as a race, I think it's great, and I'm excited for this weekend, I think.
We do have to mention, though, the future of Silverstone has been spoken about a fair amount. As things stand, this is the last ever, you know, officially, isn't it, as things stand?
And it's quite terrifying to say that, because I think British, as we've just talked about, it's such a historic event, not just in Formula One, but in sport as a whole. So the thought of losing the British Grand Prix at Silverstone, which has hosted the race continuously since 1987, is remarkable. The hope is that they'll get a deal sorted, hopefully, ideally, before this weekend, so they've got something to celebrate and mark the occasion with. But the thought of Formula One without a British Grand Prix is not really worth thinking about. Several team bosses have come out and said something similar. Drivers have come out and said that they really want it to be on the calendar. And you'd like to think that at least, while that won't be the thing that pushes the deal over the line, if you've got that many people who are involved in the sport and are dedicated to the sport are saying, we need to keep this race. You're not getting them do that for every other race on the calendar, you know, maybe in Monaco or whatever, but not everyone. I think you'd like to think that will make a difference. So we'll just have to see how it goes. But I think at the moment it's looking pretty positive.
Yeah. The belief is it will happen. But I couldn't help again but notice some talk over the last couple of weeks about the Grand Prix moving to London. if it wasn't going to be at Silverstone, you chuckle. I saw some quotes from Christian Horner saying that something about it would have to go past Buckingham Palace for the
Nelson's
Queen.
Column. I think
So what on earth is this all about?
So this isn't the first time, that's why I chuckled about the London
Grand Prix. And Sadiq Khan as well was saying he'd be up for it.
He would love it. Yeah. I think the big problem, as it always is who's going to pay for it. And as well, as much as all these guys are coming out, Sadiq Khan coming out and say it would be great to have it in the Grand Prix. And, you know, Formula One would actually love to have a Grand Prix in London. But at the end of the day, someone has got to close off all the streets. If we're talking about going past the Queen's place, can you imagine shutting the mall down for possibly a week, probably 2 weeks, and then a couple of weeks to pull it down as well? It's just, it would just bring London to a standstill. So I think the reality of doing it in that central location is unlikely. And then if you then take it outside of London, perhaps you do it around the Olympic Park, or you go to maybe somewhere like Battersea Park when they finish the redevelopment there, it's no longer in London. So then is it the London Grand Prix, and is it worth all the hassle?
Probably not.
No, this is the thing. So it's a difficult one, but it would be cool. It'd be really cool to have it in London.
Yeah, but there's no way you could have both. You can have Silverstone and London.
I don't think Silverstone would be that keen to have London, because that will obviously split the number of people who go to the event. But also they want to be called the British Grand Prix, so then you'd have to call the London Grand Prix the London Grand Prix, or the European Grand Prix, or whatever. And I know that seems really sad that we're talking about that, but that's actually a consideration that they're going to have to think about.
Yeah, okay. Right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we can continue to talk about Silverstone. Well, we know that Mercedes, Hamilton in particular, have completely dominated this season so far. Well, actually, in the previous Grand Prix, it was the first race that they haven't won. So, can Red Bull continue, you know, that decent form and momentum at Silverstone Grand Prix? We're going to be joined by Ed Straw, Grand Prix editor for Autosport, after this break.
Love Sport.
Yeah, welcome back to Love Sport. It is Jake Watson in for Johnny Burrow this evening. Up until 8 p.m. this evening, it is the Motorsport Show. Got Lawrence Barreto. We've got the senior writer for F1.com with me in the studio. Just to update you, by the way, with some Wimbledon games, they are still ongoing this Tuesday evening. Sir Andy Murray and Serena Williams are in mixed doubles action at the moment. One set up and now a breakup in the second set. So all looking good for them. The big story, I suppose, earlier on in the day was the last remaining Brit in the singles, Jo Konta, is out. She lost earlier on today in the quarterfinals of her tie. But looks all good, like we'll have Andy and both Jamie in doubles action, at least to continue some British interest until the latter stages of Wimbledon. But let's turn our attentions back to motorsport, shall we? We're looking at Silverstone. It is coming up very, very soon indeed. We've got Ed Straw, the Grand Prix editor for Autosport, on the phone. Ed, I suppose the question really is it a foregone conclusion that it's going to be a Mercedes-dominated race this weekend, or can Red Bull, Verstappen, Vettel continue that form from the Austrian Grand Prix?
I think there's a very good chance it's going to be a Mercedes weekend. There's a reason they've won 8 of the 9 races. Austria was the exception to the rules, should we say. There were reasons for that. So I think, yeah, the smart money is on Lewis Hamilton for a home victory and on Mercedes. But Red Bull, longer term, that Austria win, it's an important landmark for them. So they're going to come on strong as the next 18 months go on.
Yeah, so what was so unique about that win for Red Bull? What was it, not that Mercedes was just a little bit off it on the day, or was there genuine signs that Red Bull were now able to compete with Mercedes for perhaps the rest of the coming season?
Well, the main thing that limited Mercedes, I think, was a couple of things, really. The track characteristics worked against them a little bit in terms of the fact that they've been very strong in the slower corners in particular, certainly compared to Ferrari. That meant that they lagged behind in qualifying. And then when it came to the race, both Mercedes drivers were having to lift and coast to manage the temperatures of the power unit package. So that meant that for about 8% of the lap, just over, they were having to ease off to keep those temperatures under control. So that did knock Mercedes back. Conversely, you did also have Red Bull performing pretty strongly. Obviously, Max Verstappen was able to chase down and pass Charles Leclerc, as well as a lot of other people, in order to win that race. So I think Red Bull are gradually making progress with the car. Honda are making progress with the engine. But I still think they're in a position at the moment where it's going to be sniping for wins on the odd good day. But if they can inch along, just get a little bit closer each weekend, then eventually they'll be in contention. So it was an unusual weekend, but the fact that Max Verstappen could come through from, he was eighth after the third turn of the race, to come through and win on merit, that's impressive in anyone's book. So the car is getting increasingly quick, and of course we know Verstappen is an absolute superstar.
I don't think Max needs to worry about confidence, given the way that he's performed this year, but how much confidence do you think it's going to give Red Bull, Ed, and Honda? I know that Honda were able to run their engine much, much harder than they have done ordinarily, and I think that's a massive thing for them, but just to get that kind of first win on the board must be really good for their confidence and trying to help them push forward.
Certainly, I think it's massive. Red Bull know they can win races. Max Verstappen certainly doesn't lack for confidence, but it'll give both of them confidence in Honda. And as for Honda, remember the beating they were taking a few years ago when they were with McLaren, Fernando Alonso calling it a GP2 engine during the Japanese Grand Prix over the radio. You know, they were a laughing stock. So for Honda to make good progress, do enough to prove they should be in a Red Bull in the first place, and then win their ninth race together, that's huge for everybody working on that Honda project. I mean, you know very well, Lawrence, how dedicated they all are, how kind of personally they took the struggles they've had to the confidence Honda will have gained is massive. And I think the confidence they'll all have gained in each other, Red Bull and Honda and Verstappen, will allow them to kind of grow together, because that's what it's all about. We always talk about the package, and it's about all of those three cornerstones being rock solid if they're going to be able to take the fight to Mercedes.
And I think it is quite impressive how that package seems to be working together so well, so quickly. Like, it's easy to forget they've only been working together for 9 races now, and already they've got this first win under their belt. They've got a couple of podiums. Honda seem really happy with how they're working with Red Bull. That, you know, the honeymoon is effectively continuing. Can you see that lasting?
I think this win will certainly help. It'll get them through some bad times if there are any struggles, but I think there's other factors as well. It's not just the win. Like you say, the fact they've been consistent, they've been in the top 5 with Verstappen in every single race this year. So they're able to fight. The reliability has been very strong. All of the engines they've introduced are still active and available. They've introduced upgrades for performance reasons, but bits aren't blowing up and falling apart. So I think as they grow together and understand each other, Honda will basically feel they can do it, and Red Bull will know they can, and that should feed into each other. So yeah, it's very, very, very positive. And I think Austria is the culmination of what's been a very, very good start to that partnership. I think if Max Verstappen had finished 3rd in that race, say, I think you'd still say it's looking very, very promising. But yeah, that first win, it's a real, real landmark and a breakthrough, and I think really, really will boost everyone involved.
You were there, Ed, yesterday when Christian Horner was talking to the British media about looking ahead to the rest of the season and the races coming up. And he didn't really want to pick out any races where he thinks Red Bull might be strong, or where we might be able to get more victories for Red Bull, where they might have their best shot. I mean, if I had to suggest some, I'd say things like Hungary might be a good one, Mexico, Brazil, those kind of races. Would you be able to kind of suggest where you think they might be strong coming up?
Yeah, well, I certainly agree with those races. Singapore, obviously, is another one where they could certainly go very, very well. I think partly it does depend on whether Mercedes is on form. So you're also looking at tracks where Mercedes might be held back. But I guess the other positive thing is that they are able to, and they have done this on occasion during the season, fight with Ferrari as well. I mean, who'd have thought, based on pre-season, that Red Bull would win a race this year long before Ferrari did? That's absolutely astonishing.
I didn't see it coming.
Exactly. I don't think anyone did. So there will be opportunities, but these opportunities for Red Bull, as they have throughout this rules era, ever since the introduction of the V6 hybrid turbo engines in 2014, it's when something kind of falls their way, something happens to swing the competitive balance, and they can be at their best when others are a little bit off. And you can never be entirely sure where that will be. But obviously the great thing is that Red Bull is Verstappen caught and passed them all, Bottas, Hamilton, Leclerc, the lot. So he did exactly what he needed to do in order to beat them. So I don't think it's going to be week in, week out they're going to be there. Honda still have to do some work. Obviously, their qualifying performance is still limited because they don't have the so-called party mode to the same extent that Ferrari and the Mercedes can do. So Verstappen's always going to start at a disadvantage in terms of track position. Of course, he was 3rd fastest in qualifying in Austria. They did start on the front row. But as he showed from coming through from 8, he had the pace. So he's always going to have to make up for that track position disadvantage until Honda gets to that point. And of course, Red Bull still has to improve the car. The rule changes this year have slightly thrown them a curveball. So aerodynamically, that car's not absolutely 100%, although they have made some good progress recently, which Austria showed. So I think there will be opportunities. It's always difficult to predict. But yeah, Singapore, Hungary's a nice tight one. You know, even Hockenheim is quite a unusual track sometimes, and things can be done there. But sure, you just never know. You wouldn't have said before Austria that was the obvious place for them to have a chance of winning. We were all looking at Monaco, where of course Verstappen had a very good go at winning as the first win place, and then three races later, they do it in Spielberg.
I guess then, Ed, just to kind of wrap up, looking at Mercedes up until Austria, Mercedes were the dominant team. And this thing, Red Bull, what they did is more of a freak result, even though what they did in the race was actually they deserved it on pure performance. What can we expect in the coming races? Are we going to expect a Mercedes bounce back, do you think, in Britain? And do you think they're going to be the ones to be at least going forward?
Yeah, I think you'd still put your money on Mercedes. It was an unusual set of circumstances in Austria. It does show they've got a little bit of a weakness with the cooling of the car and the unusually high temperatures, of course, that weekend in Austria. It was very, very, very warm. That was the same weekend where we saw these record temperatures in France, that kind of thing. So, yeah, that part of the world was extremely warm. So in normal circumstances, you would expect Mercedes to win more often than not. But of course, having Red Bull improving and Ferrari with their bizarre kind of performance pattern where one race they look like they've got the pace, the next minute they're nowhere, they're going to probably continue to fluctuate, and they haven't been able to close out on that pace when they have had it so far and actually get a win. So you'd still say Mercedes, particularly in Lewis Hamilton, it has the driver, it has the engine package, it has the car, the team is really well drilled. So yeah, but they will chances are win more often than not to the end of the season. But I think the really important thing is on Red Bull, that they're on a trajectory that could conceivably make them a more regular Mercedes challenger next season, certainly. And what will be fascinating to see is how strongly Red Bull can finish the season and whether they can just keep inching up and then really make a nuisance of themselves week in, week out.
Ed, just one from me quickly before we let you go. Just your reaction to that news then that's broken today regarding McLaren, Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz being signed up for next season?
I think it's a no-brainer, isn't it? They were always likely to say McLaren would always have wanted them to, but the start they've had this year, McLaren has performed well, but both drivers have done excellently. Lando Norris in his first season is performing superbly. He's shown he can take what I sort of like to call midfield victories, if you like, in terms of bossing the midfield and being best of the rest. He was even able to show he could take it to the best of them. He had a brief battle with Lewis Hamilton last year and a little scrap with Verstappen. He was actually probably the hardest car for Verstappen to pass. So Norris, great job. As for Carlos Sainz, he's really put his experience to good use. And he's kind of, in terms of experience, the team leader. And we've seen some really good drives from him after a slightly unfortunate start to the season where luck went against him. I mean, he came from 19th on the grid through to 8th, and it could even have been a little bit higher in Austria. So he's a high-class driver who delivers good performance. There's a fresh feel to that team. They're making great progress with the car. They're developing it well. They're running it well trackside. And they've got two drivers that really have brought new life to the team. And I think it makes absolutely perfect sense to keep them together. Because if they waver, you know, there's plenty of people who'd certainly like to sign Lando Norris. Red Bull have tried to get him in the end. So it makes sense to get that completely done, effectively issue a hands-off and say, yeah, this is our future. And it'll only be good for the drivers as well. It shows that they're really ensconced there, they're back, they're their guys. Great for everything, for every side of it. And well done to McLaren for such a strong recovery this year after last year. I must admit, I didn't expect them to be so strong so quickly. It's really impressive.
Okay, top stuff. Ed, really appreciate your time this evening.
No, thanks very much. It's been great.
There we are. That's Ed Straw, Grand Prix Editor for Autosport. And just in the last couple of moments, down at SW19, Andy Murray and Serena Williams have just won their game in straight sets. Andy Murray just slamming down an ace to secure that win into the next round for those two. But up after the break, here on the Motorsport Show on Love Sport Radio, we're going to be speaking to Lawrence about someone he's met over the years and get a bit of an insight on that one. Also, we've got another guest on the phone. We've got Luke Smith, the F1 editor for Crash.net. We're going to be talking about the likes of Lando Norris, some of those British interests, those young stars coming through at the moment.
This is Love Sport.
Yeah, welcome back. It's the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio. Jake Watson in for Johnny Burrow this evening. We have got Lawrence Barreto, though, senior writer for F1.com with me in the studio. And this is the part of the show where we go inside the motorhome. Do we usually do like a surprise as into who we're talking about this evening, or we just go straight into it?
I think we'll just go straight into it.
Just go straight into it. So who are we talking about today?
So today it's Jenson Button. So former British, well, still a British driver, but former football world champion. He won the title in 2009, is off racing in Japan at the moment. So he's still having a great time on track. But the moment that I wanted to talk about was a fair few years ago now, back when he was driving for McLaren. And we flew out to Mallorca, so it sounds quite glamorous to start with, doesn't it?
Sounds like a decent gig to kick off with.
We turned up at this villa with a swimming pool. I was like, well, this is a bit random. And it turns out he was filming a Head and Shoulders commercial.
So and they needed an extra, and that was you, right?
Unfortunately, they didn't call on me to help out. I had quite good hair that day as well, so I was disappointed.
Yeah, just standing in the background, just waiting for your hair to get caught in the wind. Just need anyone? Anyone? I don't mind.
The answer was always no. So the way that it worked is he would go in and he'd do a couple of scenes, I don't know, whatever, in front of the mirror, say whatever they need to say, and then he'd come out and he'd get a break of, say, half an hour, and that's when I would get some time to interview him. But it's always funny when you do interviews with sports people on location or when they're actually busy doing something else, because they're actually way more engaged because they kind of want to get away from whatever they're being told they have to do.
Yeah, it's a nice opportunity, isn't it? Where usually when perhaps you're sat down in a pool of media people, it's just getting it done maybe as quick as possible, or perhaps not giving too much away. But yeah, I suppose, you know, by the side of a pool, in between a shoot, it's probably a nice time to have a proper relaxed chat with someone.
Definitely, and there are obviously worse locations. So and it was, the sun was shining, so it was pretty good. And thing is, Jensen's great talker anyway, so he was great to have around in Formula One, because A, he would always say it like it was, B, he'd give you something more than just the lines that you can just trot out when you're a sports person, and he'd always try to explain things. So if you asked him a question, he wouldn't just give you an answer, he'd give you an answer and then an explanation, a backup for it. So he was just a very easy interviewee, but he was also just quite good at just general chat, you know. So it wasn't that he wanted to just sit down and have a talk about, okay, right, we need to talk about this, that, and the other, I've had this many wins, you want to talk about my driving style. He would want to ask maybe about you, what you've been up to, what you've heard about in the paddock.
Okay.
Rumours.
And you obviously like dishing all the goss, right?
Well, you want to kind of have a, I'll tell
rapport,
you something,
rapport.
You tell me, yeah, something, and you kind of, it's...
Trade-off.
Kind of, exactly, yeah. And I always find it interesting when sports people do that, because they were like, well, you want to hear what I've got to say. But obviously, I guess, as journalists and as presenters, we talk to lots of people. Mm. So you're all ordinarily going to pick things up. And it's just kind of trying to get an idea of his place and how he's perceived maybe by the journalists, how other teams perceive him. Because lots of people talk in Formula One. People are talking about everyone else all the time.
Yeah.
So I think it's always interesting that he wanted to do that. But also then he was very good at, if you've got a feature idea or you've got an idea that you want to talk about, he'll just get down and he won't dance around a subject. He'll talk about it. And that specific one was just what he was like away from the track and like what he used to do in his spare time. And I think we tried to mock up like what his house looks like. Has he got a pool table, which he did, and like did he have a gym, which he did, and like you're just trying to work out what he's like when he goes home, and the vast array of cars that he happened to own at the time, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
And so that was just, I think when you then go to the circuit, and if you got him in the same experience like you were just suggesting in that press conference kind of style,
yeah,
or
be a different person.
He's completely different. And I think that it's always important, if you can ever get that opportunity, is to try and at least show what a person can be like when they're not under pressure in a racing routine or at a circuit and maybe things aren't going so well, and so put that barrier up and you can see the look in the face, they've almost signed out before they've even started. And I think in that scenario, that was the first time that I really felt like I understood a little bit more about who he was, and then that just reflects the way that you see him thereafter. So even if he is a bit tougher on you, the next time you see him, you kind of have an understanding of what he's actually like. So that was the other thing that really impressed me, is that he was just really open and honest and just said what he thought. So yeah, so it was just quite a good, quite
cool. And just lastly, as a driver as well, we know he did have successes, but how good perhaps was he, or could he have been even better if it was for different cars and different eras?
So I think it's really good, I think, that he ended up winning that World Championship, because I think it would have done him a massive disservice if he'd walked away from Formula One with still a handful of wins, but not that World Championship, because Jensen Button was seriously good. When the car was to his liking and he knew what was going on, he could galvanize the team around him, he could get them working and excited and up for the challenge, and then he would just go out and nail it. And like if he had it, he wouldn't waste that package, he wouldn't waste that car. And I think that's what was so impressive about him, and why it was so good to see him take that opportunity to win that year with Brawn. But also during the years when he was at McLaren, you know, a couple of times, one season he outperformed Lewis. And look what Lewis has gone and done. So I think that also goes to show, it just depends on right place, right time, whether you've got the right car, right team around you. And I think Jensen's a really good example of that. But yeah, I think he definitely deserved that World Championship, and he definitely could have won more if things had just fallen differently. Yeah.
Okay, top stuff. Really nice insight that onto the career of Jensen Button, and also the man. Let's got a guest on the phone now. Let's talk to Luke Smith, F1 editor for Crash.net. And I mean, I suppose it's on a similar theme. Let's talk about some British rookies, shall we? We've definitely got a couple, haven't we? Very much involved in F1 at the moment.
We do, yeah. Good evening, guys. Fantastic to see Lando Norris and George Russell on the grid this year, obviously making their British Grand Prix debuts this weekend. And Lando fresh from being confirmed at McLaren for 2020 today as well, which is good. And it's a really exciting time, I think, for British drivers and the British public to see these youngsters on the grid flying the flag and doing a really good job this year as well.
Yeah, and we've spoken a little bit about Lando already this evening, but a word on George, because we're Lawrence, just talking about your time with Jensen. I actually met George as a 12-year-old. because he's from Norfolk, isn't he? That's where originally I am from. And when I was first kind of starting out in media doing local sports reports, it was always like a couple of pages on the back, and George was always doing reports for various racing at various points. And if I'm completely honest, not many people from Norfolk go on and doing anything. So it's incredibly rare. And just whenever I then saw George, you know, progress, it was almost a sense of pride a little bit when I saw him, you know, get that F1 drive. And now I know it's perhaps not gone the same way at the moment for Lando, but, you know, your experiences for both of you on George, you know, how good is he? What is his potential, and how exciting is it that he has got an F1 drive?
Well, I think he's got massive, massive potential. And although we're not seeing that, obviously, this year with Williams, it's very much at the back of the grid, meaning that realistically sort of fighting for maybe like 15th place at best. But he's done an excellent job anyway. He's consistently beating teammate Robert Kubica. And I think one of the most impressive things that I'm sure Lawrence will agree as well is just the positivity of George Russell this year. I mean, every setback and every chance he's got to be, I think, any sort of doom and gloom about Williams' current situation, he's always putting a positive spin on things, looking for the bright side. And it's massively impressive for someone so young and obviously very keen to prove themselves. But, I mean, when you haven't got the tools to do so, it's very, very difficult, I think, to keep your chin up. But he's doing that. And I think that's also having a really sort of galvanising effect on the whole team as well.
I think you make a good point, Luke, about the way that he carries himself. Because I feel like when you're struggling, it's very easy to let your head drop. You can blame the things around you. You can complain about this, complain about that. And there's massive pressure, I think, when rookies come into Formula 1 because they've got to deliver straight away because they know that if they don't, they're out.
But there's also so much excitement over the fact that not only are they teenagers, but also at the same time, there's been many teenagers before them that have had success. It's not that it's just a free hit. You know, it doesn't work like that in Formula 1, does it? You often see teenagers break through in various other sports, and it's just exciting that they're a teenager. But with F1, it feels like there's a little bit more pressure on them because, you know, there's only two drivers per team. So to get a seat, first of all, is an incredible achievement. But secondly, so many have achieved. There's kind of expected of them, isn't it, to come in and do something almost immediately.
I think Max Verstappen has put the pressure on
massively.
Because he's just gone and delivered in that way. And he's benefited from the fact that he's had this programme whereby he was going to end up at the senior team, and that car is capable of winning races. So it's much easier to show your talents in that sense when, as Luke was saying, George doesn't have that same benefit. But he's doing everything right at the moment. I think in Austria he finished a lap ahead of his teammate. I mean, as things go, that's about best case scenario, I think. And you can see when you look at that team, George is generally looking the happier one. Robert looks the unhappier one. And if George keeps going on this kind of trajectory, he can only keep helping himself for the future. What that holds, we don't know, but he can just do the best case that he can do. I don't know how you feel about, like, Luke, in terms of the next couple of races. What do you think we need to see from George for the rest of the season?
I think more of the same, really. I think he's just got to keep up this sort of, I think, very positive and helpful impact he's having on the whole Williams team because, as you say, Kubica does seem to be sort of more downtrodden and down in the dumps, really. And I think as Williams looks to next year, it will be George that I think that they're putting more of their faith in. But also Mercedes will be looking at where they want to place George moving forward as well. He's the leading member now of their junior academy. And they'll really, I think, want to get him into a seat where he can really show his talents. Whether that will be possible next year, I'm not so sure, just because of how the driver market looks like it might not move around very much. But we'll see. I think ultimately the good thing is that he's on the grid, that he's proving himself, and he's doing everything right so far, which is really, really good. So I think if he can just sort of keep up this very positive start he's had to the season and hopefully see Williams creep a little bit closer towards the midfield, then I think it can only be a good thing for his prospects.
And then obviously the other rookie is Lando. Now we've talked a little bit about him already on the show, but what's impressed you so much and how much do you think he's going to gain from having this contract extension confirmed today?
I think just how he's grown in confidence. Similar to the anecdote about George. I mean, I remember meeting Lando as a 14, 15-year-old kid, and he was so, so quiet and very within himself. And he's, over the years, just slowly, slowly come out of his shell a lot more. And this year, even, I mean, from Australia to now, I mean, it's incredible how much he's transformed and just how much more confident he is. And I think he's also managed to deliver on everything that he's promised, and that I think the pressure that was on him as a rookie coming into McLaren, it's huge. And I remember when he got announced and I said to him, look, you've had Sergio Perez, Kevin Magnussen, Stoffel Vandoorne, they've all come through McLaren. They've all been spat out very, very quickly. Why are you going to be different? And he turned and went, because I'm better. And it was a joke. And he laughed and he was being very cheeky about it. But he's delivered on that. And he has proven already that he is so worthy of that seat. And he's just taken to F1 so, so quickly. And I think for McLaren to get him locked down for next year is very, very important for them moving forward. And yeah, hopefully Lando can now race through the second half of this season without worrying about the future to fight for or any pressure that comes with that, and just really focus on delivering the best performances possible.
What I really like about Lando is he's got that confidence that isn't offensive. So, you know, you can have like confident people and you can maybe get annoyed with them. Yeah. Whereas it's almost likeable.
It's a likeable charm, you know, lovable rogue.
Exactly.
That's the one, isn't it?
And he's playing that brilliantly. I think he's playing that card brilliantly. But then also one thing that people might not know about Lando is that he spends a lot of time in a simulator. So he's actually got a simulator at home.
Of course he does.
And so he could literally go home from the factory and say, having been in the simulator all day, and then spend 7 or 8 hours playing that, and then go to bed, get up and go to factory, and then just do that on repeat. I mean, that is incredible level of dedication.
I'm surprised there are more people don't, if that kind of technology is available to them.
I guess so, but then,
is that uncommon?
It is quite to do that kind of level of dedication. I think Max does a lot of online racing, Max Verstappen, but I think most drivers like to maybe get away from Formula One when they're you know, obviously they work hard and they spend a lot, as much time as they can, trying to get that job done, but they also like that escape, whereas I think Lando's escape is actually just to go and do more racing. And to be honest, you can't really say anything against it, because it kind of looks like it's working, isn't it?
If he genuinely loves it that much. We were speaking about Jensen, of course. Lewis, you know, these two British, I mean, legends of the sport, and you've got these two young Brits at the moment. I mean, what kind of potential? I mean, is it unfair to put that pressure on Lando that eventually, when Lewis decide to you know, give it a day, give it a rest? Give it a rest. Call it a day. That Lando's the guy to step into his place.
I think it's maybe a little bit early to kind of put that pressure on straight away, but it is expected, and that's the thing. We are now getting towards the end of Lewis Hamilton's career. I think he's very open about that. He's made clear that he's not going to be around forever. And we are looking now to the next sort of brood of talent coming through. And there was a point where you were kind of wondering, well, who is going to be the next British star? And now we've got, I think, two to choose from, Lando and George, coming through to really sort of carry that beacon. It's very early days. Obviously, Lando is going to take time for him to sort of build up towards the front of the grid, and very much in the honeymoon period of his career so far. But I think long term, we are going to be looking at him and George being the two people to really fly the flag for the UK, and hopefully take over from Lewis and give some more British success in Formula One.
Yeah, it's a definitely exciting time, isn't it, for British racers in Formula One. Luke, thanks for your time this evening, mate.
Thank you, guys. Cheers.
There we are. That's Luke Smith, the F1 editor for Crash.net, talking about this British talent, which is currently very much involved in Formula One racing. When we do come out, we've got to finish at 8 p.m. this evening. We will continue that build up to Silverstone. Of course, more British interest in that. We'll get Lawrence's thoughts on who is the team to kind of look out, the races and those conditions, and just exactly what it's going to be like for F1 fans this coming weekend.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It is Love Sport, and it is the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio. Jake Watson in for Johnny Barrow this evening. We have got Lawrence Barreto, the senior writer for F1.com, in the studio. It is lots and lots and lots of British Grand Prix Silverstone build-up excitement happening ahead of this weekend. We did speak about it earlier on in the show about kind of why it is so special and iconic, not just for fans, but racers as well. But let's talk about the nitty-gritty, Lawrence, of the race itself. Who is going to be kind of the favourites for this? Is it going to be Mercedes? Are we fully expecting Lewis Hamilton to be not even a heavy favourite, but almost to the point where people aren't even taking bets on this?
I don't think it's that much of a foregone conclusion. So
good.
Everyone could still watch it and not be too worried that he's absolutely going to smash it out of the park. But I feel like we were saying earlier, I don't think Red Bull are going to be at the races this weekend. I think it would take a mammoth effort for Max to feature. I think the two teams that we're going to see focused on is going to be Mercedes and it's going to be Ferrari. And looking at some data, was looking at some numbers that have been crunched, and it looks like Mercedes are going to have the edge on Ferrari. The nice thing about it is it's not going to be a massive gap. So like at some races this year, Mercedes and Ferrari, there's been a chasm essentially, and you just knew that Ferrari were never going to compete with Mercedes. That's not going to be the case at Silverstone. There's a couple of factors which kind of mix it up. They've put a new track surface down. So last year, a lot of the drivers complained. So when you relay asphalt, it just changes the dynamic of the circuit, the grip levels, the way that the corners feel. And a lot of drivers complained about it. So they left and they were like, fine, you complained about it, but we're leaving it. And then MotoGP came along later in the year. It rained so badly they couldn't hold the race. So it was, the conditions were so bad that they had the license taken away from them. They were like, you've got to sort this out. So Silverstone were like, all right, then we better resurface the track. So they've done that, spent about $5 million. I know, it's not small change, is it?
No.
And I read a stat that I think Stuart Pringle, who's the chief there at Silverstone, said the asphalt should be 6 times tougher. Now, I'm not quite sure why they didn't just do the 6 times tougher asphalt surfacing in the first place. But this should be a stronger, better quality surface. So the drivers should be generally happier with it. It won't break up. The grip should be better. I know this is going a little bit technical, but it's trying to give an idea of when the cars are out there on the circuit, we should get better racing. What will be key is that none of the teams will have any information. So when you go to a circuit generally, they can go back to last year and the year before that and put these numbers into a computer, and it can essentially tell them how quick they're going to be based on their car. Now, because the track surface has changed so dramatically, they don't have that same kind of data to base it on. So Friday practice will be even more important, and it could give Ferrari an opportunity, say. So if they just have a better Friday, they might be able to close that gap a little bit more and push Mercedes. Obviously, Mercedes can have a great Friday and pull ahead, but at least it kind of gives that opportunity to mix things up. So I think in terms of that kind of battle between Mercedes and Ferrari, it should be pretty exciting. I definitely think it's worth watching in this weekend.
Good. Good. So look, Hamilton, has he won more Silverstones than anyone else ever? And who holds a record? Is it 4 in a row?
Yeah.
And is it equaled 5?
I think if he wins this year, wins another one, obviously, then he will hold the record outright.
I mean, is there anything particular about the way that Lewis drives or about Silverstone that has made him so successful, other than the fact that obviously he is one of the best drivers, if not the best anyway, in the world, and has had obviously a great car over the years? But is there something extra, you know, about the way he drives or Silverstone as a track, which has made him so successful there?
So the one thing that I found over the years of coming to Formula One is, for whatever reason, certain drivers like certain tracks. And sometimes there is no reason, and they can give no reason why they like it. Silverstone and these kind of high-speed circuits seem to be the ones that Lewis Hamilton seems to relish. I genuinely do think there is something in the fact it's his home race. So not that he...
Well, he would have raced on that, though, years before even turning F1 as well, again, which must give you somewhat of an advantage.
He would have raced through it in junior formula. He would have been to that circuit more than any other circuit he's ever been to. And I do think that when you go and you compete in your home race, and if you know you're pretty strong there, you want to win that little bit more just because it's your home race, and you know what the reaction's going to be like when you win.
Must be incredible.
Can you imagine what it's like up on that podium when you're a British winner?
What is it, 140,000?
Exactly.
I mean, people talk about like football attendances at time of what it must be like there. Winning at your home Grand Prix, when it's only kind of, you know, it's only once a year, you only get that one moment, that euphoric moment of 140,000 people driving around there, even if you're just leading the race, it must be like nothing else.
And I think a lot of the time, because they're in the car and they're kind of cut off a little bit from the fans, it must be a little bit of a release that you pull that helmet off having won the race. And you hear this noise, and it must be deafening if you won the race, especially, and everyone's getting properly excited by it. And then you stand up on the podium. It must be a phenomenal thing. And you do see that Lewis doesn't really get too, like, emotional. Obviously, he celebrates in quite an extravagant way, but he doesn't get too emotional, at least when you see him. But when he wins the British Grand Prix, it just kind of looks like it means a lot more to him, just in the way that he reacts. So I think he'll be desperate for several reasons to win this weekend. First, just because it's the British Grand Prix. He was not happy after Austria when he didn't win. And you must think, well, he's won, I think, up until that point, 6 out of 7 races. He's done enough winning. But, like, it's never enough for Lewis. So he's going to want to get back on that on that winning run as soon as possible. And I think it kind of helps him that he's going to a circuit that he's very strong at, and it's a home circuit for his team as well. They're based on only just down the road.
And just very, very quickly, Lawrence, before we have to leave this evening, what else is kind of going on the day as well as obviously the racing?
So there's a couple of cool things. Frank Williams, who started Williams back up in 1969, he's been a team boss for 50 years, so that's pretty mega. And then Jenson Button is going to be driving the Braun GP car that he won the world title in, so he's going to do some demo laps. So to see that out there is going to be pretty amazing. So I think overall for the fans, it's going to be a great weekend.
All right, super stuff. Well, Lawrence, it's been an absolute pleasure doing the show with you this evening. Johnny will be back next week, and fingers crossed, well, you have this race to talk about. Fingers crossed there'll be some British success for you. Again, Lewis Hamilton, a very, very heavy favourite to win at Silverstone this weekend. This has been the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio, and I hope you can join us next week.
This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.